America Weekend. Call Sabatino with Roland Smith, and this is Smith Sabatino. And welcome back, and thank you so much. And Roland, you earlier on, as we were preparing for the broadcast, wanted to, in this particular segment, talk about stealth bomber.
Well, I had the opportunity a number of years ago to see the stealth up close and personal. And I wrote kind of like it's an essay, I guess, about that experience. And, it's a little bit longish, and I ask everybody to bear with me.
Let's take a listen.
I think it's kind of interesting because we can talk about it afterward.
Please.
All right. So I said, what is it about the stealth airplane that intrigues and tantalizes the adult mind into a childlike wonder? I found out. I was excited. I was a general aviation pilot. I did want to see this super secret stealth up close, but, you know, not too close, Carl. You know, the secrets out there. The place was an air show in arid southern New Mexico, Alamogordo. Even the name sounds ominous. It's hot, remote, surrounded by secrets. The first atom bomb was tested at nearby White Sands. Alamogordo, the home of the Holloman Air Force Base and the 46th Fighter Wing and the 117th Nighthawk Stealth Fighter. I was going to have a face-to-face meeting with the mythical angular composite dragon and with the men who knew and flew the beast. I'd never seen the stealth 117 fighter or the B-2 bomber in person before. My previous experience and exposure to stealth technology was still pictures, sanitized distant video, and scientific words that painted more of a myth than an explanation. Secrets, again. Airshow day at Holloman, as I walked across the tarmac, already preheating in the morning sun, I felt apprehensive. There were many familiar things around to ease my tension, but my mind ignored the familiarity. This was a place of dichotomies. The past, the present, and experimental airplanes existed all in one place. Biplanes, propeller aircraft, military and civilian, old jets and new. I walked the maze to the center of the field. Then, there they were. Two black, geometric, looking like gargantuan wasps dangling their spindly webs. They were a riveted collection of ebony triangles and trapezoids corralled by a double layer of ceremonial crimson ropes. A 4-foot no-admittance zone existed between the elegant rows of velvet red. Behind the second row, almost at attention, armed guards with M-16s eyed the onlookers with seeming suspicion. Maybe that was part of the mystique. Maybe it was public relations. Maybe it was real. But people still gawked and leaned way over that first line of rope defense. Each plane was stenciled with the name of the man who flew it. The pilots were there too, ready to answer questions. They looked chiseled, sculpted, and trim in their gray flight suits. When they started to sign autographs, I knew they were human. They were both younger and older than I expected. Actually, I didn't know what I expected. I really wasn't sure what kind of pilot flies a secret geometric machine, except probably the best that America can train. I asked one pilot if the Nighthawk was the best plane he ever flew, and he said he liked the F-15 better. Before my surprise and awe could wear off on that, people all over the tarmac stopped and looked. Children listened and watched, somehow knowing that the hush that they heard was special. Carl, it was the softest hush with the most power I ever heard as the B-2 bomber approached. Silent. It was a thin line out of a distant hazy hush, rapidly growing bigger as it neared the airfield. Suddenly it was overhead, 1,000 feet above, a flyover, no sound, no warning. No wonder they call it Spirit. This deltoid wing was ghost-like, an apparition, and perhaps, to the uninitiated, something seemingly extraterrestrial. Once on the ground, it was certainly omnipotent in a brief presentation. a mysterious icon shrouded in black composite robes, receiving homage from the excited multitudes and attended by a stoic, priest-like military. I hadn't seen this kind of adulation since the Pope came to America. People old and young pushed and jostled just to get closer to it. The shoving bordered on rudeness. It was nothing violent, yet categorically assertive in that need, that ever-present need to get close. The B-2 engines were running. The high-pitched engine noise added to the myth and called the throngs to kind of a techno vespers. The plane flexed its ailerons and flaps, blinked its lights at the crowd, but stayed aloof just far enough away from the exuberant fans who wanted to rush and touch her. MPs stood guard, alert, weapons ready. Secrets to guard. The B-2 brief stop on the taxiway was designed to acknowledge and perhaps to placate the blind tithing of the taxpayer. $3 billion per plane, maybe more. That was enough for me, Carl. The mystery disappeared when you add up the cost, but not the appreciation of the human intellect that conceived and created this machine. It was a masterpiece. There are probably secret needs and deterrent reasons for this airplane that I don't understand. But can you imagine what that kind of unfathomable money could do to fund 1,000 other worthy causes, making a crippled child walk, a blind person see, or even feeding the world's hungry? Such unrealistic dreams. At the time, it was enough Pollyanna for me, Carl, because I did like that airplane.
Well, and well written, Roland. That is the majesty of power. And yes, that money could be spent, $3 billion plus a unit. There's only 90 that have been built.
Yeah.
Because we can't afford anymore.
Have you ever seen one?
Yes, I have. I remember back from my days at Subic Air Force Base, Clark Air Force Base, when Subic Bay, when the B-52s were flying regular runs into Vietnam. And they were noisy and smelly, and they were of an age that this note doesn't ring to. You can hear them miles away as they were landing. When they took off, you needed earphones just to kind of hear. Your head felt like it was going to blow
off.
Like your head was going to blow up.
Yeah.
And I was standing on the tarmac as they were going down the runway, and unfortunately in the wrong spot. But they stuck us military kids any place they could to get us going off to the next transport, going someplace else into the unknown. However, of an era gone, but remarkable in itself, and a journey that most people, believe it or not, don't take. And be thankful that you took it, because most people won't ever even see one in their lifetime, except at these kinds of air shows.
Yeah, the air shows, I think, are an important public relations aspect.
Sure.
for all military, but particularly the Air Force, because they got these magnificent crafts that can do almost anything these days.
They fly around the world. They deliver their payloads with extraordinary precision on the dime, as they say, and they leave. And they're never heard, they're never seen, and they're gone.
And they don't land when they're, let's say you have to go on a mission, a military mission. You leave someplace in the United States.
Yes, correct.
You're refueled a couple of different times across the Atlantic or
correct.
The Pacific, wherever you're going.
Yes.
You do your run, your
yes.
bombing run or your whatever kind of run you're talking about. And then you come back and you refuel and you stay awake for almost 20 hours,
yes, and
if not more.
And what they were doing during the course of the Iraq War and others, they add a new crew in there, and they turn them right around and send them back out again.
Yeah.
They will not land them anyplace else but in the United States. And understandably why. But they have multiple crews now that just take that plane right back out again within 15 to 20 minutes of minor servicing, and off it goes again. Another 6,000 or 10,000 mile journey. It's extraordinary.
Do you think that they have to make sure that their tray table is up tight and locked?
I'll tell you one thing. For those of us who've seen them do their thing, and their thing is quite extraordinary, They are the future.
They are. Listen.
They are the future.
My humor does not mitigate the respect.
No.
And the admiration that I have for the men and women who fly all of these kinds of aircraft that protect us and our way of life as needed.
And they are the future of this country in different ways. We can talk about that. We should.
Well, you know, we should do a whole section on drones.
We should.
Because
I like that.
Right now, these aircraft are flown by human beings. At some point in the very near future, they will not be flown by human beings. They will be all electronic.
Let's hope
and
we...
done by stick and rudder from a distance.
Let's hope we always have hands-on with the human touch. Let's hope. Carl Sabatino, Rollins Smith. This is Smith Sabatino on America Weekend on the Envision Radio Network.
America Weekend, Weekend.
Now, cheap psych tricks with Dr. Buff.
And Dr. Buff here. Has your family established computer rules? They're very important, and with younger and younger children getting computers, you better start now and establish the basic do's and don'ts of computers. Here's the developmental science of it. First, it's never too early to teach your child that the grit and grime of the playground will mess up a computer keyboard. So wash your hands before you play with the computer. Also, other computer rules that families are developing include no eating or drinking at the computer, and probably most important of all, turn down the speakers when you enjoy your favorite game. What's the cheap psychological trick? These rules will keep not only your child computer friendly, but family friendly too. Got a parenting question? Contact me at drbuff.com.
Don't complain about your cable bill going up and up and up. Do something about it. Grab a pencil and jot down this special number.
Call 888-359-MYTV.
Order in the court.
This is Attorney Jay Coleman with The Final Verdict. As a new substitute teacher, Linda was told to go to the district headquarters to be fingerprinted. So on her first day off, she got fingerprinted. But as she drove away, she hit a motorcycle, causing serious injuries. The rider sued the school district, believing Lisa was acting within the scope of her employment at the time of the accident. How do you think this real-life case turned out? The final verdict after this.
You can turn $100 into $200 in just 1 hour. IamNotKidding.com. Double your money every day of your life. Visit IamNotKidding.com. IamNotKidding.com.
The court said that an employee who decides when to be fingerprinted and elects to do so on her day off is not acting within the scope of her employment. And that's the final verdict.